I think that the Orthodox Church's perspective on the topic that we're talking about is so compassionate. And while it believes in the unbreakable nature of the sacramental union, it acknowledges the fact that as a result of who we are, marriages do end.
Divorce is one of our two subjects on today's edition of Come Receive the Light, and we'll talk with Father Joannides about the Church's perspective.
So those are some other examples of reasons that the Church found legitimate and permitted people to sort of, you know, have a second chance and even a third chance for that matter.
Things happen.
Yeah, things happen, and things happen as a result of our human frailty.
And we'll have that very down-to-earth conversation in just a few minutes here on Come Receive the Light. But first, we'll talk about an Orthodox orphanage outreach in Guatemala.
Many of them have been just dumped, and they're on the streets, and the police find them and bring them to the orphanage.
Some things are just hard to believe, aren't they? I'm Mike Trout. This is Come Receive the Light, a broadcast outreach of the Orthodox Christian Network. And our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos.
They actually do have a basket out in front of the orphanage, just like in the stories, you know, and people will bring them. But mostly the police bring the children when they find them.
That's the voice of our first guest on this edition of Come Receive the Light, and we'll hear from her and our host, Father Chris, in just a moment. Again, I'm Mike Trout, and I am so appreciative of the fact that you've chosen to spend a few minutes with us. If you are a new listener to Come Receive the Light, you can find more information about the ministry by going to our website at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. Come Receive the Light is just one of many ministry outreaches through the Orthodox Christian Network. Again, our website is myocn.net. And do tell your friends all about us. We are heard at this same time on this same radio station each week. And now, here's our host, Father Chris.
I'm joined today by Sandra Anderson, who is a longtime supporter of the Hogar Rafael Orphanage in Guatemala. She's here to share about her experiences there and update us on what this important ministry of the Church is doing. Welcome to the show, Sandra.
Thank you.
For those listening who might not be familiar with the orphanage, can you tell us a little bit about it?
I sure can. The orphanage originally was a state-run orphanage, and it closed down because of corruption. All the money was never going to the children, and they were being treated terribly, so they closed it down. And then in 1996, in the summer, those in power, so to speak, who used to run this orphanage, went to the monastery where Mother Inez, the abbess of the monastery, and Mother Yvonne and Mother Maria were, quietly being monastic nuns. And they asked them if they would consider helping them to reopen an orphanage because the need was so great. And so I know with a lot of prayer, it was very difficult for them to make that decision because being monastics, to have to go back into the world again is a very, very difficult thing. And but, you know, God was calling them, so they opened the orphanage. It took them about a year just to get the repairs and get it cleaned up. And in 1997, they received their first 115 children. And Mother Inez likes to tell the story how she became a nun because she really, you know, wanted to be a monastic. And she said, "And I don't even like children," she said. "And God gave me 115. So whatever we think we're going to do, God has another plan for us."
And so, how long have you been going to the orphanage short mission trips?
I've been going there since the year 2000. That was the first time I went in the summer of 2000.
And, tell us about that first trip you went on.
Well, of course, it is extraordinary, and there was only two of us at this time that went, and I was living in Texas at the time, and a friend had gone, and she said, "Please come with me. I can't explain it. You need to come." So when I got there first because of our flights, and I was walking through the compound, and a little child ran up to me, and I speak Spanish, so she said, "You know, are you a missionary?" And I said, "Yes," and she hugged me. And So I asked Mother later, and I said, now, why did she ask me that? And she said, well, we have many people who come here, and they're not always nice to the children. She said, but they know, they're starting to understand that the missionaries will let them hug them.
Right.
And so that moved me so much that, you know, she just wanted a hug, so she was going to ask whoever came through the door if they were missionaries or not. And so it was very moving because the children are so, they're so loving. And it just touched me.
And how are they orphaned? I mean, the ones that you've encountered, what's happened to their parents? Do the parents just give them up, or are they deceased? What happens?
All different things. Unfortunately, many of them, their parents have been murdered. There's a lot of murder that goes on there. Unfortunately, many of them witnessed this. Mm. Many of them have been just dumped, and they're on the streets, and the police find them and bring them to the orphanage. They actually do have a basket out in front of the orphanage, just like in the stories, you know, and people will bring them. But mostly the law, the police bring the children when they find them, and that's how they get many of the children.
And I understand from our research that the orphanage is hoping to move to a facility outside of the city. Can you tell us anything about that?
Yes, actually, up at the monastery, they own a lot of land there that's been donated to them. And so on one of the couple of the larger plots, they started about, I want to say maybe 4 years ago, to build a new orphanage. What happens is they get money, they build the orphanage, they don't have money, they stop. They get money, and, you know, that's just how they have to do it. And they really want to get the children out of Guatemala City because where we are, in it's called Zona 1. It's like the worst neighborhood that they could possibly be. It's surrounded by bars, and there's gunshots and dogs and fighting and prostitutes on the streets. It's just a horrible, horrible environment, even though they're in, you know, literally walled in. And they have a guard at the door and, you know, that kind of thing just to keep the children protected. But we find bullets in the grass, and it's really horrible. So they're trying to get them into an environment that's more safe and environmentally more sound for them and natural. So they'll be up there, and they have the beautiful church now that they built. And so they would be able to be together, be in a newer building, be out in the fresh air, in the mountains, and out of the streets, literally out of the streets.
And that sounds exciting. Let's talk a little bit about how we can help. What are some of the ways that our listeners could support the orphanage mission?
Well, first of all, if they want to go onto the website, if they pull up HOGAR, they'll Google right to it. On there is a foundation that takes care of their money in Chicago. And anything that you donate, you will receive a tax-exempt receipt and a thank you letter from the HOGAR and the children. They always need, shoes, socks, better clothes, and, you know, they get a lot of that from the teams because all of us, like when we go every year, we ask them, what do you need this year? And we have a drive. For instance, this year we did socks for all the ages, and last year we did pajamas for all the ages.
So and people, of course, can package them and send them down to the orphanage, correct?
Well, that's the problem, is they don't want it sent to the orphanage, so they try to have it come with mission teams because of the fact that it gets stolen.
Okay.
It's very difficult and very dangerous to send anything.
Okay. That's
so, and the website will explain all that, too. It has, you know, different things that you can do. And like I said, if you can always call or email and find out what team might be coming and see if you can make arrangements with them to take some of your stuff. A lot of times people will ship us things. They know we're going, and they'll say, hey, we collected some Spanish books. Will you take them down for us? And they ship them to us, and we take them on the plane with us.
Okay.
So things can be done.
This, of course, is an orphanage, so people can also offer a new Orthodox home to one or more of these children, right?
Well, unfortunately, they can't. UNICEF is one of the big problems. They helped pass a law in Guatemala for a new council. It's called the National Council of Adoptions. And so orphanages or private lawyers are no longer allowed to carry out any adoptions, only the ones that go through this National Council of Adoptions. What happened is they really want to put the kids in foster care or only have the children adopted with Guatemalan families. Now, right off the bat, that doesn't make sense because most of the Guatemalans are very poor. They don't have the capacity to do foster care, and there's very, very few families who can afford to take another child and adopt it. So it's really what's happened is in 2007, there were 5,000 adoptions in Guatemala. In 2008, 72, and last year, less than 100.
Oh, my.
And so it's a huge problem, and they keep saying that they're going to open up the international adoptions again, but it hasn't happened now. It's been a couple of years since 2007 when they stopped them. And UNICEF, you know, unfortunately, really wants private orphanages to disappear. They really want them all to go under Guatemala and be under their care. But what's happened is they have these government institutions, but the kids are not taken care of very well because they're packed. They just don't have enough help. And a lot of the private homes and orphanages have closed in the last, they went from 220 orphanages and homes for children to 100. So it's really going in the wrong direction. So at this time, there are no adoptions coming out of Guatemala unless you've had the paperwork in for quite a long time.
What about sponsoring a child? I mean, is that something that could happen?
Yes, absolutely. And when you go on the website, they actually show the pictures of the children, and you can click on a child, and it will tell you about that child and their name and how big they are and what they want. And that information is on there as well. And they welcome the adoptions because now, I mean, the sponsoring, because now the children go to school, and they get to a certain age, and then they aren't going to go anywhere. They don't have families. They have nowhere to go. So now we have to educate them after school, you know, till we can get them 18 years old. And by sponsoring them, you're also able to help them to save money and hopefully be able to go to school. And what they really want is the kids to go to school and stay in the community and become parents.
Yes.
To some of the children in the orphanage, because there will always be new children.
Well, this has been fascinating. I didn't know a lot of these things are happening, especially issues about the adoption. That's disappointing, but let's hope for the future. Is there anything you'd like to share with us in closing, maybe a personal memory or something you've gained from your visits there?
I think I would. The most important thing is the children live like the monastics. These children get up in the morning, and they are not forced. They go to church every morning, they go to church every afternoon, and they go to every liturgy, they go to Orthros, they just live in the church, and they love it. And so the one time we were there, Father was out blessing, because we go at Theophany, and we brought a priest with us. And Madre was with him, and there was no one, a nun, in the orphanage to open up the chapel and do the compline. And so we thought, oh, yay, we've been in church 3 times today. Now we can relax. And all of a sudden the church bells rang, and all the children were going into the church, and we looked, and they had put a footstool up by the reading, and they just did the whole service themselves. That's how much church and God is a part of their life. And these children know who their father is. They are not orphans. We don't feel sorry for the children at the Hogar. We feel sorry for the children who don't make it to the Hogar, because they know who their father is, and they're very steeped in their faith and totally trust that God is taking care of them and that he loves them. And this is a gift that there are no words for these beautiful children.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, Sandra, thanks so much for the work that you've done and for coming on our show today to tell us about this most important Orthodox home for children. Listeners, if you'd like to learn more about the orphanage or begin supporting it in some way, just go to our website at www.myocn.net for a link to the orphanage's website. Thank you, Sandra.
Thank you, and God bless.
Again, that web address is myocn.net. And as Sandra said at the beginning of the conversation, if you just want to Google Hogar, H-O-G-A-R, that should give you a link, and I checked it out, it does, to the orphanage's website. Again, this is Come Receive the Light, a broadcast ministry of the Orthodox Christian Network, and that is our website, myocn.net. And when you go there, you will be able to contribute to this outreach and the other ministry efforts of OCN. There's a link right on our homepage that will allow you to join with us financially, safely, and securely.
I know people who've been divorced 10, 15 years later, and they still feel guilty. They still feel shame. And I'm not sure, in many cases, whether that has redeeming value. So forgiveness is really important.
That's Father Charles Joannides. He has been a guest on Come Receive the Light many times in the past, and he is with us again today. He's the director of the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese Department on Interfaith Marriage and the author of a book entitled Attending to Your Marriage. And our subject with him today is divorce, and we have a guest co-host handling the interview chores, Emmy Luvaris. And Father Charles responds to her first question, which was, tell us what the Scripture has to say about divorce.
First of all, the reality and practice of divorce is acknowledged in the Old Testament, but it doesn't seek to offer any justifications for it. The New Testament, however, does offer a few reasons why marriages might end. St. Paul, in his first letter to the Corinthians, in chapter 7, verse 39, he says the following: a wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives. If the husband dies, she's free to be married. So it's fairly clear that after death, one is able to remarry. After that obvious reason, things get a little more sticky. And I decided to have Matthew chapter 19 open to me. Chapter 19, verses 3 through 9. In those verses, the Pharisees challenge Jesus and want to know what his position is with regard to divorce. And one thing that they say to him is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause? And that's the important piece there, for any cause. And Jesus essentially, he offers a lot of information, but essentially he says, no, not for any cause. And then he goes on to talk a little bit more and elaborate further on that. But before he does, again, the Pharisees challenge him, and they say to him, well, if that's the case, why then did Moses command one to give a certificate of divorce and to put her away? And in response to that, Jesus says, for your hardness of heart, Moses allowed you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it was not so. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for unchastity, and that's the key point here. In the Greek term for unchastity is porneia, which I believe is translated by the fathers to mean adultery. So that's the second reason. And then, again, from a scriptural perspective, Paul deals with another issue in the first century, which was fairly unique to the first century, but I think it has some application to us today in our pluralistic, contemporary, multicultural society. He's addressing some questions that the first century Christians had related to divorce. And in particular, he's being asked, you know, what happens in the case where a couple, where one individual converts and embraces Christ, and the other individual continues to live a non-believer's existence or a pagan existence. What happens in those cases there if the non-believing partner chooses to leave the marriage? And Paul offers the following counsel. He says, if the unbelieving partner desires to separate, let it be so. In such a case, the brother or sister is not bound to that particular marriage. So from my perspective, I think those are the three reasons that boils down pretty much from to those three reasons.
So what about holy traditions? What can we learn from them?
When we're talking about holy tradition, we're really talking about the canons. We're talking about what the holy fathers of the church, and in some cases perhaps the holy mothers of the church, have written about divorce, as well as the pastoral idiosyncratic needs that it's had to deal with. In an effort to keep as many people connected and perhaps help as many people come to the knowledge, the full knowledge of the truth, and also taking into consideration human frailty, the church has been somewhat tolerant and lenient with regard to divorce. And in addition to the three reasons that I mentioned, there have been a number of other interrelated reasons, and I want to emphasize that term interrelated, interrelated with the reasons that I just mentioned earlier, interrelated reasons that the church has embraced and accepted as, I guess, legitimate reasons why a marriage might end. Just to give you a few examples, chronic alcoholism, chronic gambling.
Mm-hmm.
Another example might be infertility and impotency. Another example would be abandonment for a period of time. If one of the partners suffers from a serious mental illness. And then the last one that comes to mind, in the case where there is present in a relationship life-threatening abusive behavior. So those are some other examples of reasons that the church found legitimate and permitted people to sort of move on and, you know, have a second chance and even a third chance for that matter.
Things happen.
Yeah, things happen, and things happen as a result of our human frailties. I think that the Orthodox Church's perspective on the topic that we're talking about is so compassionate and so pastoral. And it really does give people an opportunity to remain connected to the church and yet at the same time acknowledges that, you know, we're not perfect, that we do make mistakes, that things do happen. And while it believes in the unbreakable nature of the sacramental union, it acknowledges the fact that as a result of who we are, marriages do end.
So finally, what can couples who have decided to divorce or may already be divorced do to make sure they don't cause any further damage to themselves or anyone else?
Great question. First of all, I just want to say this. My heart is with these people who have gone through divorce. I can think of very few things that are more painful than going through a divorce, so I really do have sympathy for people who go through divorces. I think one of the things that they can do, because there is life after a divorce, is to spend some time, preferably with your priest, and if not with your priest, then a qualified couples therapist, someone who really knows couples. Spend some time processing through what happened. Because when people go through a divorce, they can tell you in explicit terms what their partner did to contribute to the demise of their marriage. But they can't tell you, or nor can they clearly identify what their role was in the process. I also urge them to work toward forgiveness. Forgiveness, first of all, of themselves. I know people who've been divorced 10, 15 years later, and they still feel guilty. They still feel shame. And I'm not sure, in many cases, whether that has redeeming value. So forgiveness is really important, and asking God to come into their lives and grant them forgiveness, and also help them to forgive their former spouse. And also, don't live in the past. Learn from the past, but don't live there. So many people get stuck in the past after a divorce, and it's 10, 15 years later, and they're still stuck in the past. The other thing that I would urge them to do is to keep the children out of the middle of this and protect the children. Children have such a hard time with divorce. We know that divorced children just don't do as well as children who are, generally speaking, again, who are part of intact families where both parents are living with them. So keep the children out of the middle. then finally, and probably this is as important as anything that I've said today, consider how their faith in Christ can help them going forward.
Well, thank you so much, Father.
Oh, you're welcome.
And if you have been listening to our program and would like to purchase a copy of Father Joannidis' book, Attending to Your Marriage, A Resource for Christian Couples, just visit our OCN bookstore at myocn.net. Thank you so much for being with us today, Father.
My blessing again.
And it is our blessing to have you along with us for this edition of Come Receive the Light, and I hope you'll be back next week. We are an outreach of the Orthodox Christian Network, and you can find out more about our ministry and become a financial partner with us when you go to the website at myocn.net. Do share with your friends the fact that we're on the air on this station at this same time, and remember to always have faith in what you listen to.